This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
I'm sick with this, I'm sick with this. Since you went to the bottom, I just missed. My own sweet time, didn't teach what I found. I didn't recognize simple things anymore. I don't want to be defeated, I don't want to be defeated, I don't want to be defeated.
Are you ready for a good time? Oh, hello. Welcome to another episode of the show, the podcast, Lead Singer Syndrome. I am your host, as always, Shane Told. I am just about to go to Europe. I'm getting on the plane in, well, I'm not getting on the plane. I'm going to the airport in 30 minutes. I'm quickly banging this out. I'm going to edit it on the plane. You know, the struggle is real. There's a lot of work that goes into these episodes. I do appreciate you listening to them. And oh my God, the episode this week is great. It's a doozy. I welcome Dustin Bates of Starset onto the show. I don't know if you've heard about Starset. I'm sure you've heard their songs. They have a lot of radio success. It's pretty hard if you're putting on active rock radio not to hear some of their hits. But what's so cool about this band is they're not just another radio rock band. They're not just a rock band in general. There is some big-time conceptual stuff going on here. Starset's backstory is, to say the least, far more involved than most bands. The band emerged from the Starset Society, a highly intelligent organization which aims to publicly educate and inform about the importance, uses, and philosophical debates surrounding technologies related to four distinct categories. They are space, automation, brain, and body. The Starset Society uses public outreach programs which relate the information, quote, in a manner that is both entertaining and informative, unquote, which is where Starset, the band, comes in. Now keep in mind, this backstory is fictional. However, it's hard enough to write a concept album, let alone be a concept band. So to say the least, this episode is very, very interesting. Before we get into that with Dustin, I want to thank you all for listening to this, being a part of this. Whether you are a casual listener, if this is your first time checking this show out, whether you're a super fan in the All Access Club, which I will tell you about in a little bit, regardless of the reason or why you're here or anything, welcome. It is a beautiful, beautiful thing that I can speak to you, that I can communicate. We can learn about new bands together. We can talk about music. If you ever want to get in touch with me, it's very, very easy. LeadSingerSyndrome@gmail.com. You can tell me how you liked an episode or didn't like an episode. If you have suggestions for upcoming guests to the show, they are more than welcome. Hit me up, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. Make sure you follow us on Twitter. Make sure you follow us on Instagram. And check out the Facebook page. Just give it a search. It'll pop right up. So this weekend was super rad. I played a show out in Iowa, Sioux City, Iowa, of all places, with A Day to Remember and Beartooth. It was almost like a mini festival. And I had such a good time. And one of the reasons I had such a good time was all of the fans of the show, all my sinners in the All Access Club that came out to Iowa, of all places. It's not easy to fly there, believe me. You have to take at least one connection. It's a tiny, tiny little airport. But it was so rad to see everybody come out. We partied, we hung out. It was such a good time, and it warmed my heart. Shout out to Andre, who came all the way from Australia to do this. It was pretty bonkers, and I look forward so much to all the future little mini Sinnerfest meetups we're going to have. If you want to be a part of this, if you want to be a part of the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club, check it out. The link is leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. Basically, you get bonus episodes every month, question and answer session with me. I play some tunes on there. You get access to Lead Singer Syndrome merchandise, including patches sent to your house every 3 months. They're pretty sick. And of course, access to an incredible community of friends from all over the world, from all walks of life, that are here to talk about music, sports, life, whatever you want on the Facebook group. It is awesome. So again, the link is leadsingersyndrome.com/all access for as little as $6 a month. It gets you in. So check it out, and shout out to all my sinners worldwide. If you are a listener in Europe, be sure to check out the upcoming Silverstein tour dates. We're playing France and Belgium and Netherlands and Germany and Austria and Czech Republic. So we're going to be around. So check it out at silversteinmusic.com. Would love to see y'all there. Okay, he's got a master's in electrical engineering and Air Force research and has also taught at the International Space University. That is not fictional. Here it is, my conversation with Dustin Bates of Starset. Take me higher, I'll sing, oh, you make everything okay, okay, okay. I'm here with Dustin Bates of Starset. Great to have you, man. How's it going?
Not too bad. Just back home in Columbus for a little while.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, people want to say, oh, they'll call this band like the hardest working band in show business or, you know, that kind of stuff. I want to nominate your band for that title. Because what you guys do, it's so elaborate. It's so out there, and it's so all-encompassing. When you get home, is it like, all right, time to relax, or is it, all right, what do I have to do? Like, I've obviously got shit to do, you know?
I tend to relax for, like, a day. I feel like sometimes a little more.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I actually get even more work done when I'm at home.
I'm sure,
I fall into a... You know, when I do work on the road, it tends to feel like work because you're fighting against, you know, saving the energy for putting on the show, improving the show, running the show. But at home, I fall into a pretty cool groove where it doesn't really feel like work. And I just knock tons of stuff out. And, you know, I can do other like random things, go for a bike ride, clear my mind. And I just get super efficient. But yeah, there's no... Not all. I definitely don't just come home and mess around.
Right. And do you have, like, what's going on in your personal life? Are you married? Do you have children? Are you single?
No, I just have, I'm single and I have a dog who people make fun of me because he is like a child. I'm about to take him for a walk, actually.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
Yeah. And he, He's just as crazy as my life gets as a dog.
Absolutely, man. Well, I kind of want to start from the beginning. I think you have such an interesting story. Obviously, this the whole, you know, Starset thing I want to get to. But I kind of want to go back and start from the beginning because, you know, obviously, you know, you're from Columbus. You've had this crazy, you know, academic career. And also, you know, a lot of people don't talk about your old band, Downplay,
yep.
Which, you know, was, you know, you guys did some stuff. It wasn't, you know, it's definitely a band that you did tours and you put out records and you were on, you know, Epic Records and stuff like that. So talk to me from the beginning, you know, how you kind of got into this whole, you know, music thing and also kind of the role that, I guess, you know, academia and science and school all played into it.
Yeah, the first thing that got me into music, and this sounds like some made up anecdote, but I really think it's true.
Okay.
Barring any sort of revisionist history of telling myself this story, but it's the drum fill of Phil Collins in The Air of the Night.
You know what I think of when you say that? I think of The Hangover.
Hangover.
Yeah,
yeah,
where
totally.
Mike Tyson is hang on, shut up. I love this part.
Yeah, literally, I think I fell out of my chair in the theater when that part happened. But yeah, my mom was a huge Phil Collins fan and played it, you know, but that was the moment I was like, I got to play drums.
Right.
And didn't have enough money for a drum set, but I got a snare drum, joined the school band and all of that.
Okay.
And then eventually, when I was I think 12, I mowed lawns and bought a drum set until about a year later when I was basically I had driven my stepmother crazy enough that I was time to move on to another instrument. And I started playing. I randomly picked strawberries and sold them to get a guitar. Funny thing is about that, I'm left-handed. And, okay. You know, left-handed stuff is like twice as much money.
Yeah, it is. So, it is weird. It's weird.
You know, I don't. But it's just supply and demand, you know.
Sure, I get it.
They have to make less, so the price point is higher. But I started, you know, I'd always played air guitar like a left-hander. And then as soon as I picked enough that last quart of strawberries that equated to a right-handed guitar, that, you know, I didn't have the willpower to keep going, and I bought a right-handed guitar, so I've done that right-handed ever since.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think sometimes it gives maybe somebody an advantage because, like, you know, when you play guitar, and, I mean, I know everybody knows this, but I'll explain it anyways. You know, if you're right-handed, you're really just using your picking hand, and you're like, you know, you have six options in the combinations. Like, all the yep. stuff that's really challenging is with your left hand. So it would only mm-hmm. make sense that if you were left-handed, you know, you would have the you know, that the power would be there and you would be better at playing that way. Right?
Yeah.
You think it would give you an advantage.
Sure. Yeah, and you would think it, but I'm pretty terrible. well, I actually, it did develop a sort of rhythmic thing to my playing. Maybe the drums, having played the drums and then, you know, having my left hand at the fretboard, it added a certain somewhat unique rhythmic element to right. to the way I played and wrote riffs and stuff. So yeah, I definitely it made it unique, that's for sure. But right. Yeah, so I guess I started playing guitar, then discovered I got into Weezer and then in grunge, of course, mm-hmm. and then discovered Metallica a little late, you know, that okay. they were on like, but the funny thing was I went from, you know, liking Metallica to discovering the old stuff and then yeah. became a super fan of, like many people do, super fan.
Metallica.
Yeah. And so it was Master Puppets and Justice for All, Ride uh-huh. Lightning. That trifecta really got me. So Weezer made me want to write songs, I guess. And Metallica made me want to be in a band and like crazily.
A powerful
and
band, so, right. I get that yeah. combination. And yeah, those are obviously two, you know, maybe not, you know, you wouldn't listen to Star Set and be like, oh, it sounds like Metallica mixed with Weezer. But I mean, I definitely yeah. can see those being influences. And it's funny you mentioned, you know, how the one moment of that Phil Collins song made you want to pick up, you know, pick up the drums. For me, it was Metallica and the end of One. You know, the really fast, like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know the part I'm talking
Dude,
about?
Totally.
So I heard that and I was like, what is that? I have to do that.
Yeah.
And I went to ask my sister. I said, what is that? Is that drums or is that guitar? And she said, I think it's guitar. And I mean, we know now yeah. it's both at the same time.
It's totally.
But I went and got a guitar right after that. So,
dude, I totally. There's the video of me and two other, like a drummer and guitarist, like, playing to that with like a strobe light on in my basement.
Yeah, man.
I haven't, man, I need to find that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So I'm right there with you. The One was like, that was the jam. And the video I thought was the darkest, most crazy yeah. thing ever.
Oh yeah. With the, like the dubbed in, like kill me part.
Yeah.
Like the, that is one of the best videos. And as a guitar guy, I always thought it was weird that Kirk Hammett was playing a Fender Stratocaster in that video too. I was like, Metallica doesn't play Fender Stratocasters. But then you know what I did?
Oh, I
went and got one because Kirk Hammett.
You got a Strat.
Because it was my first like good guitar was an American Standard Stratocaster because Kirk Hammett was playing it in the One video. So,
wow.
There you go.
That's very atypical. Not some Flying V or something.
I know. Absolutely. Well, if he's playing a Flying V, maybe I would have got a Flying V. Who knows? But Anyways, yeah, so you got into that, and obviously, you know, you found some friends somehow in school, or however, you know, you start playing with other people. How did that happen for you?
Yeah, there's always a group of pseudo outcast kids that are trying to be in bands, and you know, maybe cool kids as well, I'm sure, but I tended to be in a band with, well, I guess some of them, we wouldn't, you know how it is. Some of them might even be offended by hearing me say that I considered us pseudo outcast, but I think we were. The first band I sort of was in, I played drums, but just for a minute, I wasn't very good. And then I did, bass and then guitar, and it was and eventually it, like maybe 18 I think or 17 I started singing. I was terrible, but that's like the typical problem in high school, is that everybody is terrible at singing, and then you just are the least terrible.
Exactly.
And then you just keep going.
Dustin, you wouldn't believe, I've done, this is like 131 episodes of the show I've done, you wouldn't believe how many times I've heard that. It's like, I was the only one in my group of friends that could carry a tune, so I became the lead singer, and over time, I just got better.
That's it.
Yeah.
And I still to this day, I don't really consider myself a singer.
I hear that too.
I just write songs, and someone's got to do it.
Were you always, sorry if this is offending to you, but were you always like a nerd?
Oh, that's not offensive. I always was, and still am. I've just learned manage it better. That's the word.
I love that word. That's a great word. Manage it better. So, how do you manage? How do you manage it? You get like better clothes, leather jacket.
You got to be careful. The leather jacket puts a little too on the nose that you're trying to compensate.
Right.
So, I don't know. I just mostly just getting better social skills through sheer force. that's been a lifelong process, to be honest.
Sure.
I was just, the social skills were entirely lacking. That was the first thing. And then finding interests outside of nerddom also, that comes along as well. And then, I don't know, I think those are the two main things. In fact, for that first thing I'm saying, the social skills, I was violently introverted, and then for a while in interviews I was like, yeah, but I've managed to have a faux extroversion that I've developed and whatnot, and now I'm sitting here like just maybe a couple weeks ago I was like, oh shit, I might be an extrovert now, this is messed up. So
yeah, well that's interesting. I mean, you're obviously, like, you know, being a lead singer of a band on tour, interviews on stage, dealing with fans, you have to like ooze this confidence. And I think at first it can start out sort of being contrived, or you're kind of just, you know, doing it because that's what you do. And then over time, I think that can actually become a part of your personality. I think absolutely.
Yeah. And that's funny you say that as well. I'm careful not to, to ascribe to that all the way, but the confidence is absolutely necessary. In fact, especially on the stage every day, no matter what, might not have, and that's a huge, is super important. Cause I might not just be naturally just this very, ultra confident person all times, but there's something on the stage that when you, I call it the hypnosis, really, that people can read fear or weakness, especially on some of these tours where you're walking out there with three spacemen and two cyborgs and on like a heavy ass tour. And The best case scenario, the people that have never seen you before, they want to know if they should like it or if they're socially allowed to like it.
Right.
And so the best case scenario, they're on the sort of the edge, and you have to walk out there, and it's nonverbal, really, the thing that you have to portray. And if you lose it, it's hard. It's not, it's like visceral. It's not, it's hard to put your finger on it. But if you don't have it that night, the fan conversion or whatever,
right,
is noticeably lower.
Right. Yeah. It's, I think you're right. I think you're right. Well, I don't want to skip right over downplay, but you know, I do want to talk about it, but I want to talk about Starset and just this world, you know, that you've built, around it. And, you know, I'm in a band and we've put out, you know, 8 albums, and I've put out, you know, 4 concept albums, and, you know, doing a concept album is hard enough, but you guys are a concept band.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole thing, that whole idea that you've come up with is just so intense, constantly, like, you have to work on everything making sense, following a story. You can't really go veer off too much out of a lane because the nerds are going to say, wait a second, this doesn't add up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about the idea, where this all came from, and how, you know, how are you feeling about it now after having so much success?
I guess the synthesis of it was out of the chaos and destruction of what had been my PhD schooling and downplay. You know, I had left schooling because in the very end of downplay, because I couldn't juggle them more.
Right.
And soon after I did, I lost my record deal, and I had already sold all of my instruments, and I invested everything in the potential success of downplay, and I had no money, no path. I was just off the track.
Right.
And some of the elements that were to become the overarching narrative of Starset happened before Starset started. I don't know if it was a psychotic break or whatnot, but I had to move back into my parents' house, and I was in their spare bedroom, and out in the garage that I had once jammed in, I had these massive, I still do this actually, massive, like, papers, the sticky, I don't know if you've ever seen them, they're like 4-foot papers that stick on the wall.
Sure.
I do this every time I like replan entire levels or worlds of things, but I had, you know, the walls were covered in a sort of vision of futurism and certain tech and I guess some of the philosophical components of what was to become this thing. But it wasn't initially intended to be this multimedia project. And then I got the bug to write more music, and then I realized that it should be something that I'm more passionate about.
Right.
And can meld all of the things I like. And it just kept going and going. And so to answer, or to, I guess, address your questions, that was the backstory or whatever.
Right.
It's certainly a lot of work to keep it going, but it's something that I think you'll see if you follow the band in the next 6 months. You'll see that it even has it has other levels.
Sure.
And other intentions, and we are going to simultaneously continue to like build on the world we have in terms of media and narrative, but also do some of the futurism outreach. We're in a very amazing position to help shed light on science and how it's affecting our lives. So, you know, we're not just a band that focuses on the future dangers and pitfalls, these hyperbolic pitfalls of tech gone wrong. We also focused on tech in the present And only now have we then had the resources and ability to also bring that forward. So it's, I guess, to answer your question, it's only getting crazier. And I totally get what you're saying on, you know, being true to the fans, while also fleshing out some of what hadn't been released before. It's difficult.
Yeah.
But fun.
Yeah, no, it must be difficult. I mean, it's all encompassing, you know, with your shows.
Well, I'm studying. Go ahead. I'm stuttering on words here.
No, it's fine.
I'm literally living some of the issues. I sometimes don't know how far to take this behind the scenes. You know, I'm Dustin of the band. If Star Set is the movie Inception, not Inception. I'm trying to think of a good Interstellar. I'm the less good looking Matthew McConaughey of it, right? So if that's the case, I'm sitting here as Matthew McConaughey talking to you, and I don't, but Inception, the movie, is still in theaters,
right?
Or Interstellar, the movie, is still in theaters. I'm not trying, the more I make this about Dustin, the more the spotlight comes off of Interstellar, and the harder it might be for some viewers to suspend disbelief. So I even have reservations as I talk to you right now.
Right.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Well, it's interesting, though, because I don't know what your intentions were when you started this thing, when you were in your parents' garage planning it, writing it down. I mean, obviously, everybody has their thoughts of what things could be and then what they think they might be, and then what they actually are can be vastly different from either of those things. Mm-hmm. And I think in your case, it probably is vastly different, especially when you talk about the mainstream success you've had with some of your songs. I mean, I hear, you know, I live just outside of Detroit, and I hear your songs on 89X all the time on that radio station, you know, and that kind of mainstream success sometimes lends itself to the casual fans, you know, the fans that want to go hear something that fucking rocks, they can bang their heads to, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to say negative things about your fans or anything, but a lot of times those kind of fans, they're maybe not as in tune with things like technology and science, and they aren't highly educated, you know, and they don't really care about, you know, all this stuff that you care so much about. Is that a weird sort of duality? I don't really know the word, but that you have to kind of navigate around, like making something that rocks, but at the same time, like something that you guys care about and that your real, you know, hardcore fans care about?
Yeah, I need to be careful to address all of the things that sprung to mind as you talk about that.
Right.
First off, I went into this with the goal of finding some mainstream success while harboring larger artistic goals.
Yeah.
Some of my favorite bands were able to manage that, and it's harder now, I think, but still trying.
Sure.
But if knowing that if that worked, then 90% of the fans would be pedestrian and would be surface level.
That's a good word.
And
for
knowing
it,
and that's okay. In fact, it's awesome. That's part of the plan. It's that those people are just as awesome to us. And that's not just me copping out and saying, like, being born, but that's, you know, when I wanted to be Metallica, those same type of fans, you know, that it's still awesome to have them. But the challenge then is to service the 10% of fans that want more because if you maximize this from like an economic perspective or otherwise, things would quickly shift towards servicing that 90% and optimizing that.
Yeah.
And And so it's a balancing act to be able to keep this going and growing and making a cooler stage show and finding profit for your label inadvertently, because that's their motivation. And then on the other side of the coin, you could stay insular and entirely devoted to the 10% and enjoy, you know, enriching the story entirely. And it's a constant battle. It's a good battle, but I think both can be achieved. But
sure.
And at the same time, that's the internal battle. Then there's the external battle of this is a cutthroat world, cutthroat industry, even more so than maybe it ever was.
Maybe. Yeah, but that's the thing I like about your band, though. Is you know, there was this. I don't know if you've ever heard of this project, this band. If you haven't, you have to check them out. It was called Captured by Robots. Are you familiar with this?
Okay, I'll check it out.
Okay.
No.
It's let me explain, and a lot of listeners are going to love this too. So basically, this guy built these robots that could play instruments. So they would stand there, like he'd put kind of a guitar on them, and he'd have like their hands would move up and down to fret, you know, the different notes, and there was a robot that would literally hit snare drum and kick drum and everything, and they had songs, and he was the singer. But the concept of the band was he was like in chains because these robots kidnapped him and they like forced him to play music with them. That's like this backstory.
That's awesome.
And
that pisses me off too, because I'll tell you why in a minute.
Okay.
Keep going.
Okay. And this was probably like at least 10 years ago this happened, and I don't know what happened to it. I loved watching it because it was just so entertaining to see this, and it was so like just out there and something you'd never seen before. But the thing about it was like the songs weren't really any good, you know. Like I wasn't gonna put on the records at home or whatever, because like it wasn't like really creative. Like you could tell that all of his work and effort and everything was put into the building this and the technology, not really the creative part. But what I like about your band is that you guys seemingly put just as much into crafting great songs, songwriting, lyrics, you know, production. All that stuff is really, really good, to where you guys could stand alone just on your records without the whole, you know, the concept and the Star Set Society and all that, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Thank you, you know, for that. That's cool to hear. But the funny thing the flip side of that is when people come to see us and they didn't know about what we do on stage.
Right.
There's always a certain amount of like, oh, I love the band, but drop the stupid this or get rid of the stupid that. And I always wonder about why people are offended by it when, you know, we're giving them something on top of that as opposed to the same thing they'd seen. It's very interesting to watch people be afraid of change to that level.
Right. Well, I guess some people just they don't want to be associated with something that I guess maybe someone else could say is a gimmick. You know, that band's just a gimmick, and then you're like, wait a second, they actually have great songs and like, you know, and great lyrics, and they're actually trying to say something, and it's something more, you know. But a lot of times people will just look, you know, skin deep, and that's what they'll see. So, you know, that could be a part of it.
And totally, you just landed exactly the same way I define gimmick. when like a DJ will be like, I love your gimmick. And I'm like, well, exactly for the same reason, a gimmick, that word only applies if it's sort of covering up the fact that there's nothing else there.
Yeah.
It's the one way to find an in into the industry or something. I always think of like, have you ever seen the movie Airheads?
Of course, yeah.
I love that movie.
I watched it just the other day. It was
like
on
the
TV.
Cat in the Hat. Dudes in like the Cat in the Hat hats. Like anytime there's like four dudes at the radio station.
Yeah.
And they're like dressed like assholes. And I'm every time someone calls the band a gimmick, I'm like, God, I'm in the same group as the Cat in the Hat guys and Airheads.
So why did you say I just want to get back to this. Why did you say that thing about the Captured by Robots guy building the robots? Why did you say that pissed you off?
Oh, well, first off, there's two things I haven't said. And I get anxiety when I open up these new threads or tangents. So I have to answer the other thing too.
Okay.
And that's when we were talking about the 90%, 10% thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's also another issue that goes along with another thing you had said, in that, you know, my demons or monster, once you know you have a song that can service that mainstream thing, how far towards it do you steer? How far in terms of production, in terms of content, how far do you engineer it towards being a hit? And then when you find, if you go too far with that and then you find success, the issue that you might have is a disparity between your art songs and your commercial songs. And so that's another crazy thing to try to balance.
Right.
But anyways, back to, so I'm doing a side project called Mannequin. It's like MNQM.
Yes, I saw that there. I was wondering how you pronounced it, but Mannequin makes total sense. Yes.
Yeah. And I say we're, and it's just like me and a producer.
I do that too with that show. I do that with this podcast. I'm always like, yeah, if you want to get in touch, you know, you can email us. And it's like, wait a second, you can email me, you know. But anyways, go on.
Yeah, exactly. It's very electronic. It's a blend of some 80s sounds and super modern sounds. Trap and new wave and Stranger Things and the funny thing is that I've joked about having just a bunch of mannequin looking robots play the songs. So when you said that someone had done that, I was a little upset. Like, basically, it's the vision I always get is, dude, what is that song where it's all like models play? Oh crap! It's like all the same looking androgynous models. It's a music video.
Okay.
Whatever. But I was gonna kind of rip that off intentionally, like make it look just like that.
Right.
But it's mannequins. So.
Well, it would make sense. I think maybe if you want to do that, you need to call the Captured by Robots guy, and maybe he can help you help you build the robots. Maybe it can be a little collabo.
You should do a podcast on where he is now.
I should.
I imagine it's somewhere weird.
I haven't thought about that guy or that thing in like 10 years. I'm sure somebody out there listening to this knows it, and I'm definitely going to look into it when I get off the phone with you. But another band that it reminded me of when you were talking about the art songs versus the hits, you know, is like a band like Tool. You know, that's a band that has had extreme success. You know, having hit songs like Sober and, you know, and like big radio hits that people want to go see. But then at the same time, they have fans that want to go see them play like a 9 or 10 minute, you know, weird song, you know, like that.
With like four time signatures.
Yeah, like, you know, that's like some crazy like deep cut, you know. So in some ways, I'm sure that model, in you know, obviously every band is different, but that kind of idea could work for you guys too in a sense.
That is, I guess they would be the high watermark for how to achieve that.
Of course, yeah.
And the funny thing about a band like that is only maybe a band every generation or so gets that license too. You have to, you have to get lucky and you have to earn it and you have to be incredible.
Yeah.
And all of that has to come together. It's sort of like with movies too. Only maybe one or two directors gets to break the mold of certain things. And so that's the goal, for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think another band that comes to mind is Pearl Jam. You know, that's a band that had a lot of mainstream success on their first, you know, two or three records, and then they broke with it tradition completely. Stopped making music videos, and now they're one of the biggest, you know, cult following bands, you know.
They fill up stadiums.
Yeah.
Incredible.
I know they're crazy bands. But another thing that I have to bring up is just the YouTube success you guys have had with your music videos and everything else, and even some of your fan music videos having crazy amounts of views. I think your publicist sent over a little thing. It said over 1 billion now, views of your music on YouTube. That's crazy. You must put a lot of thought and time and everything into that side of the band too.
Well, some of it was thought and some of it was planning and luck.
Right.
We came out right as YouTube was at a place that it was a sort of an inflection point for.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in Downplay, I had realized that, you know, major labels were looking at YouTube as an, as like an adversary, as like a Napster, and they were doing copyright strikes.
Yeah.
And what I realized though, and they weren't letting people use their music. And what I realized was YouTube was basically the radio of the future, and or one of the radios of the future. And at the same time, a major label is paying in exorbitant amounts of money for a few spins on the radio for their acts.
Yeah.
They were keeping the music from being spread on YouTube. It was very weird. And so
totally.
I realized that I've basically made a database of tastemakers on YouTube and became friends with some of them and offered my music, Downplay stuff even back then, for free and gratis licensing to use in their content, and with the goal that all of their listeners, all their viewership would see it and a certain portion would like it and explore more, but also that the content creators within their viewership would then use the music. So that was the plan. That's what we did with Starset from the very beginning. And I think that was the first one half of the coin. The other reason that it took off, in addition to that plan and the timing, was that our music is soundtrack music at many points, you know, and so it worked out that kids could use our music to
totally
enhance their creations.
Totally.
And it just keeps spreading.
Yeah, totally. Well, you know, you seem like a bit of a, I don't want to say control freak. Again, I don't want to offend you, but is it kind of weird that, you know, someone else is putting up a video of your music and then it has like 122 million views? You know, like more than your, like, is that weird that that's out of your hands? Does that bother you in some ways?
That particular video I'm well aware of.
Yeah.
There's a funny story I'll tell you in a second, but it bugs me because I know what caused that. It was I was paying a friend to do a lyric video for My Demons before we put it up, and I had teased that I was going to put something up. This is way at the beginning, no record label or anything, and I had made some arrangements to let a gamer use My Demons in his video, and he was going to release it on this day. And that day came, and my friend hadn't completed the lyric video. And so this song My Demons went up, and, you know, within an hour, a kid had made a lyric video for it and put it up. And so ever since then, the way the YouTube algorithms work, any video with whatever video has the most plays goes to the top.
Yeah.
So you could have all these awesome, we have like two or three videos we've made for My Demons, and those will always go below this because it has less, less plays. So that has just been it's just taken off and just never looking back. If you look for My Demons and you just want to listen to the music, that's the one you watch.
Right.
But that's also proof that, people go to YouTube to stream music similar to Spotify.
Totally.
And it's another reason that I guess we get screwed over as in terms of money. I don't sit here and stew about it, but, you know, the labels are getting paid as if they were videos. And then the audio part is just another small little chunk of that that's broken down into their rapey pie. So it's like, It's a rape pie within a rape pie.
Jeez, yeah.
So, but the funny story about that is the kid that made that came to a show, and we were joking about how his video had that many views and how he, like me, hadn't seen any money for it.
Oh, wow. Jeez. Well, I don't know. I mean, now that, you know, YouTube is changing, right? There's that new thing they just launched, or they're launching.
Yep, the music, yeah.
That's a bit, you know, that could be a really big thing because, you know, just the video component that doesn't exist on Spotify or Apple Music is a huge, you know, oversight. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens. I want to talk a little bit, too, about your shows or live shows and your production. Just with your live shows, so elaborate and everything. And you must have a big hand in putting that together. And some of the things that I've, you know, seen on you're doing, like with, you know, your violin and cello players in these boxes that literally, like, become opaque and then translucent. Like, that is crazy. Like, how does that, where does all that stuff come from?
Yeah, I design all of it myself. I just get, I just try to find ideas that are unique, but also service the show. That started with the drum cube, we call it. On the second record, you might have noticed that the drums, maybe 40% of the time, are loops. They're not live drums.
Right.
So I didn't want them to have to just sit there. And I also didn't want them to play them live. I wanted that differentiation between the live drums and the electronic drums. So I wanted to loop them. And so I realized that if I could put him, oh, and I also hate cymbals, which you may or may not hate as well, as a singer,
sure.
Cymbals in the ears. So I wanted to solve that too. So I realized if I could put him in, this clear box, then that would attenuate the cymbals.
Yep.
And if I covered the box in this electrolytic type polymer, then I could make it go opaque or not. And so when he's not playing, it goes opaque, and that instant I projection map onto it, so crazy video happens. And then when he starts playing, I have it programmed so it goes clear and the video stops and then he's lit up back. And so there's this push pull in the visual that's sort of magical.
Wow.
And
yeah, that's crazy. And then
did the similar concept for the cellist and violin, and now, you know, the three cubes sort of turn on and off whenever they're playing or not. And then it's sometimes it's an entire wall of video across the stage.
Wow. How do you research this stuff to find out about this? Is it other bands, other shows? Like, obviously there's some people really on the cutting edge, like Nine Inch Nails, for example, always has the most cutting edge production, but where do you actually find out about this stuff?
That specific stuff, I was like, how do I make this go opaque? And then I remembered being in a bar, some trendy bar where, the bathrooms had that, a version of that where they went clear and, opaque. And I was like, I researched trying to find that material, and then found the company and then ordered enough to cover all of the panels with it. And then, you know, I found out it operates on standard 110 volts. So
right.
I just got some relays and did some wireless DMX that came out of just the DMXs unit, and then ran it off of MIDI within Ableton.
Oh, wow.
So.
There you go. Very, very cool.
Yeah.
I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but thank you so much for doing this, man. I got to ask you, too, about this whole Marvel collab and the graphic novels that you've put out, you know, along with your records. I would have assumed you're a big fan of Marvel and that stuff, but I actually heard you weren't into comic books.
Yeah. I had a few comic books as a kid, and I was like a poor kid, and I didn't really read them. Like, I thought that if I saved them, I would one day be a millionaire. And so I just had these few coveted comics that I've since lost. And who knows if they were worth anything. But money was a bit scarce as a kid, so I didn't put it towards comics. And as a result, I didn't become a super fan. I'm certain I would have otherwise.
Right.
Instead, I did the extra super more nerdy thing and just went to the library and read novels and books.
Yeah.
At first I felt bad about that, having a Marvel comic and not being a super fan. But then I realized, you know, I try to live my life that it, that, is more in line with some of the science and things that are the topics of Marvel Comics. So, you know, if I'm big into science, I think it works.
I think it works too, but it must have been funny collaborating with them, and they might, I just think of some them saying something like, hey, we can send you like this, you know, whatever, you know, Spider-Man thing. And you'd be like, oh yeah, I like don't really care, you know, like just keep it. Like, I just picture like a conversation like that and Marvel being kind of like butthurt, you know, just assuming that you're super into it or something. I don't know. I don't know why that conversation played out in my head, but I do think it's very cool. And that's a very cool opportunity. Almost no bands get that opportunity.
And my entire goal is to make it worthwhile for them and us. And we're creating some new things that I think could be incredible for future Marvel endeavors. So
very cool.
We'll see what happens.
Very cool, man. Well, thanks for taking the time. What's coming up next? You can tell the people about with Starset and anything else you're working on.
Yeah, some of the things I hinted at, the what we tentatively call, well, just on the inside, we call the light side of the Starset Society. It's the educational side of it. We're really developing that, the website that's going to host original content that and also aggregated content that looks at science and tech and its current state of the art, where it's going, where it could end up, and how it could change our lives politically, socially, economically, and otherwise. And
wow.
Developing other various media around that, and not just social media, but physical media and various other projects surrounding that. I'm really excited about that. But at the same time, working on some new Starset releases. There are a lot of things in the can. And
cool.
Getting a lot done now that, you know, we're off the road.
Great. And when are you going to go back on the road for more demonstrations? I know you called it your live shows demonstrations, which I think is terrific. So when are more demonstrations happening?
There, it appears that there is going to be a hometown one pretty soon,
awesome.
But it's not public yet. And that's potentially in July. And then we're doing a run out to Sturgis for the, I think during the motorcycle rally in August. And
okay.
We just keep getting challenged by greater and greater scary situations. I think it could be amazing. I have no idea what to expect. I might have to turn our lasers up to increase the wattage so it can zap all of the piss jugs that get tossed at us.
No, man, bikers love, you know, space and technology and all that stuff. So absolutely.
Yeah, it'll be cool.
All right. No, that's great.
Otherwise, it's going to be straight up Blues Brothers.
Right.
Instead of chicken wire, I'm going to have lasers crossing the stage. And then, yeah, we're going, it looks like going to Tokyo for a new number of shows
nice.
In September.
Nice. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's terrific. Have you been there before? I assume you have.
No.
Oh, first time. Wow.
Yeah.
Enjoy. That's going to be crazy for, I mean, I love Japan. There's no place like it. So it's going to
awesome.
Be terrific. Well, Dustin, thank you very much. Anything to add before I let you go?
No, just really appreciate this. It's been not boring like some things can be. So,
but it wasn't boring for me either. This very eye opening and very different. You know, I said I did 130 something podcasts, and there hasn't been one quite like this. So I appreciate your thoughts and your words and everything. So all the best, and I hope to see you around.
Thanks a lot, man.
Yeah, take care, Dustin. Thank you.
See you soon.
Yeah, cheers. So there is with Dustin. What an interesting guy, interesting conversation, and very, very cool band. I love their whole thing, their whole aesthetic. That is not easy to do, to say the least. Again, thank you so much for listening to this thing, for being a part of this podcast. Be sure to check out the All Access Club. Again, the link is leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. I'm going to be back next week with a very, 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 very big episode, a long-awaited guest. I know y'all are going to want to tune into it. I like the surprise. I like the surprise, but fuck it. Next week, Anthony Green from Circus Survive and Seosin will be on the show. Make sure you're subscribed. Hit the subscribe button right now. And if you like the show, tell a friend, tell a loved one. That is how we spread the word on this thing. As always, I will leave you with a tune. Here is the smash hit from Starset, Monster. I'm Lee Singer-Singer. Peace and love, and we'll see you next week.
Under the knife, I surrender. The innocence yours to consume. You cut it away, and you fill me up with hate. Into the silence you sent me. You are the man I left.